Next on The Balanced Word.
Today, I think a lot of people act like, and I think it's because of misunderstanding of some scriptures, but you can figure that out on your own. But a lot of people act like when we get married that we make one deal. I won't have sex with anybody else. And then that's the one thing that will break a marriage. But you better understand, no matter what the theological perspective is, if you enter into a relationship with another person and you make commitments to have a relationship, it can be broken by a whole lot of things.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Maybe you've been through a divorce and know firsthand how painful that is. Maybe you didn't realize it, but God actually filed for divorce with the nation of Israel. We read about it in Hosea. And that's where we're headed today on The Balanced Word, as we have another Bible story to bring your way. In the first three chapters of this book, we receive Hosea's personal story. And it's not a pretty one. He was to marry a prostitute, and she won't be faithful to him. The marriage didn't work out. And it's a picture of God's relationship to his people, who are not faithful to him. Here's Dave Rolfe with all the details.
Now turn in your Bibles to the book of Hosea. Hosea was a prophet in the northern tribes of Israel. So from the books of the Old Testament are not in chronological order. So when Hosea was prophesying, he was in the 10 northern tribes before they were taken into captivity by the Assyrians. We know that the southern tribe, the tribe of Judah, was independent for a lot longer, and then finally they were conquered by the Babylonians. But Hosea is prophesying at a time of relative prosperity in the north. They just thought things were going great and would continue to go great, and yet God gave him a message to present to his people. The name Hosea actually is the same root word from Joshua or Yeshua, Jesus. The word means salvation. And so he comes on the scene at a time when, well, it's pegged down there in verse 1, Hosea 1:1, the word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Those were kings of Judah down in the south. And in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So that's to spot it. Now, those kings in the south, like Uzziah and Hezekiah, had great revivals during their time. But in the north, pretty much all the kings were dirtbags. And so that's where he was prophesying during this time. It's a fascinating book, and it's really depressing in some ways, because the story that basically the first three chapters kind of relays Hosea's personal story, and the rest of it is just some of his other prophecies. But the basic point of the book of Hosea is God is saying to his people, who he had considered to be his bride, he is saying, I am divorcing you. And here are the grounds for divorce that I am presenting you. And he introduces that concept in an instance of a guy named Hosea, who he tells to marry this prostitute and then end up divorcing her. So for those of you that have been made to feel like second-class citizens because you've been divorced, if you read the Old Testament, the book of Jeremiah, the book of Hosea in particular, you find out that God is a divorcee, so don't feel like, oh, it's terrible. And you go, yeah, but what about remarriage? Well, God ends up marrying the church, and he's still going to get back with the children of Israel, so there. But so the story of Hosea, it starts off in this weird way. Verse 2, chapter 1, Hosea. When the Lord began to speak by Hosea, here's like the first things God said to him. The Lord said to Hosea, go take yourself a wife of harlotry, marry a prostitute, and have children of harlotry. For the land has committed great harlotry, by departing from the Lord. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Now, right away, we go, oh my, this poor guy. It's like, okay, who wants to be a prophet? I will. Okay, here's what I want you to do. Marry a prostitute, and she won't be faithful to you. What? And not only that, her name's Gomer. And so we look at this and we go, man, this poor guy. But when you look at a story, don't look at it just one-dimensionally. I think of Gomer. What would this be like for her? First of all, how does somebody become a prostitute? Does anybody aspire to that? Does anybody think, well, when I grow up, this is what I'm going to do? No, women who become prostitutes, it's usually because they've been abused and mistreated in some way. Their father, their family was disgusting to them, or they were left to raise themselves, and their life just became more and more desperate, and they just had to do whatever they could do to try to survive, maybe to support children and whatever. So it was, I have sympathy for Gomer. Plus, what kind of parents name their kid Gomer? But that's probably where it all started. It didn't, you know, like a boy named Sue. But I also think, you know, imagine if you are a woman that everyone scorns, that everyone looks and whispers about you, and you are living a life of disgrace among God's people. And then a prophet comes, and he wants to marry you. And you're like, you're kidding me. A man of God wants to marry me? And then he says, I'm only doing it because God told me I have to, because he wants to make an example of you, so don't get too blessed. So this poor gal, this poor guy get married. What is the potential that a marriage like that is going to work? Well, it didn't work. But as we read on down through the story, right away, he took Gomer as his wife, and she conceived and bore him a son in verse 3. And then the Lord said to him, hey, congratulations. Call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. It'll come to pass in that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. So they have a kid, and he goes, name him Jezreel, because Jezreel was a valley there were lots of wars fought there, but in particular, this is where that evil King Ahab and his wife Jezebel had killed Naboth just to steal his vineyard because Ahab wanted it for his birthday. So they slaughter him, and God is saying, hey, in the valley of Jezreel where that happened, that's where I'm going to conquer the nation. And 40 years later in the valley of Jezreel, Shalmaneser, the Assyrian leader, came in and defeated Israel right there in that valley. So great thing to name your kid. Hey, congratulations. Name him the place of disgrace and the place where ultimately it'll be Israel's defeat. This is a rough life getting rougher. So then it says in verse 6, and she conceived again and bore a daughter. Now, it doesn't say bore him a daughter. So you start to question, is he even the father of this little girl? But God said to him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, which means no mercy. For I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. And, you know, I'll still have mercy on Judah, but not on Israel. So then when poor little No Mercy was weaned, she conceived again and bore a son. Not bore him a son, she bore a son. And God said, call his name not mine, Lo-Ami. So if you were wondering, it's like, okay, usually the dad would name the kid, so God told him. And so he says, here's your baby. Name it not mine. Because God said, you are not my people. Now, then God begins to talk about his people and his relationship with them, and at the same time going through their relationship, and you find out that Gomer is going back into her old lifestyle of prostitution. She gets desperate, and she then thinks, I should go back to my husband because it was way better there than it is out here in the streets. But he says, no, you're dead to me. And I want nothing to do with you. I won't take her back. And God says, that's the same way I am with Israel. I've had it. And they're, you know, they can die as far as I'm concerned. And which adultery, you know, they never talked about adultery being a grounds for divorce at all in the Old Testament. Since adultery was grounds for murder, much more convenient that way. But so then God begins to talk about Israel, and he even says, I'm not going to be done with you forever, but there's going to be a long time that's going to pass before I'm then dealing with you again. And this is what was happening. And then when you get into chapter 3, God has, in that little short chapter, God has Hosea go to the slave market where now Gomer is for sale. And God said, buy her back. And he got her, you know, it says over there that he paid 15 shekels of silver, chapter 3 and verse 2. A normal price for a slave would be like 30 shekels of silver. So she was on sale because she was so used up. And he picked her up. There are big lots for slaves. And God said, bring her back. But even though you love her, let her know. You guys are done. She can be a slave in your house. You'll provide for her, but you will not marry her again. You will not remarry her. And then God says, in the same way, I have plans for Israel. And in fact, I will continue to provide support for her, but we are divorced. And the day will come when we get remarried, but it's going to be way out there in the future. You read the description of it there in the end of chapter 2, and it's really clearly that he says, we're going to get married, but it's going to be when I'm your God and you're my people and we are back in your land. And he's making the promises that all the prophetic books talk about, or almost all of them talk about, the day when Messiah sets up his kingdom, and then once again Israel are the people of God. So lays all that out. Now, to understand some of this, if you read through it, you have to understand a little bit about marriage laws and divorce in those days. And we have a lot of extra biblical references to it and some biblical references. Whenever they would get married, they would make a covenant. That is a contract where they would come together and mutual promises were made. It's really similar. We still do the same thing today. We get married, we will say things like, I promise to love you, comfort you, honor, and keep you in sickness and in health, and forsaking all others, keep myself only unto you as long as you both shall live. So they had the same thing. But in most of the marriage contracts that we've found from the Middle East and from this time, including in the scriptures, like over in Exodus chapter 21, there's an example of it. It usually included several elements. The first one was, a man would say, I promise to bring food home for you. And the woman would say, and when you bring the food home, I will prepare it for you. And then the man said, and I will bring home fabric. And then the woman would, you know, and they lived in fabric houses. So she would create a home and she would design and make clothes for him and for the rest of the family. And so there was this mutual sharing. Then the third element, which over in Exodus 21, it's just translated as marital rights. In a lot of other places and a lot of these contracts, they use the euphemism for marital physical relations as oil or wine. It was this celebration, this physical expression of affection that was a part of the contract. Now, whenever that didn't happen, Whenever for some reason the man wasn't providing or they weren't having, he wasn't, in those days your whole value came from bearing children. And so if a man wasn't doing that, you had the right to go, I need to go find somebody who will. And, you know, if a woman was out leaving the home and not doing what she was expected, not involved in this relationship, that's when marriage broke down. And we'll look at chapter 2 here, and we see the allusions to some of this. He says, in verse 4, he says, I'm not going to have mercy on her children, for they're the children of harlotry. So this is Hosea, it's also God. Verse 5, for their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has behaved shamefully, for she said, I will go after my lovers, who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. See, those same three elements. It's very similar to what in the New Testament in Ephesians, Paul talks about marriage with the same sort of mutual commitment and all about cherishing and honoring and so on. So she takes that, and then instead what she does is she goes off to her lovers with the stuff that he gave her. And then it gets worse because then she says, they give me my bread and water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink, my affection, their affection. Therefore, verse 6, behold, I will hedge up your way with thorns and wall her in so that she cannot find her paths. She will chase her lovers, but not overtake them. Yes, she will seek them, but not find them. It'll be unsatisfying. Then she will say, I'll go and return to my first husband, for then it was better for me than now. So selfishly, she goes, I was better off with him. For she did not know that I gave her grain, new wine, oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Therefore, I'm going to return and take away my grain, my wine. I'll take away my wool and my linen that was given to cover her nakedness. And she can be uncovered and insulted, and that's just the way it is. So God is saying, I'm divorcing Israel for the same reason why Hosea divorced Gomer. Because we made this commitment, and she flagrantly is violating it. She isn't doing what she promised in a marriage. Now, we flippantly make these kinds of commitments when we get married, but often we kind of don't think about what it is that we're promising. None of us fulfills those promises perfectly, but here's the thing. Today, I think a lot of people act like, and I think it's because of misunderstanding of some scriptures, but you can figure that out on your own. But a lot of people act like when we get married that we make one deal. I won't have sex with anybody else. And then that's the one thing that will break a marriage. But you better understand, no matter what the theological perspective is, if you enter into a relationship with another person and you make commitments to have a relationship, it can be broken by a whole lot of things. If you know, like in their case, they were not worshiping God. They were not reciprocating that relationship that he had extended to them. And so he says, when you treat me that way, this relationship is broken. And I think most relationships that fall apart are because we totally forget what it was that we promised to do for each other. And it's the same thing in a relationship with God. We stop reciprocating, we stop relating, we stop appreciating, we stop worshiping him. And in the case of a human relationship, we take for granted everything that somebody does, and we just think that we can just have a right to stay married no matter what. Now, whether it's right or wrong, the fact is, if you treat somebody in a horrible way, you will not continue to be married. Now, you might, through people beating somebody over the head with Bible verses, you might say, okay, we're not going to get a divorce because I don't think I don't think they tell us we can't do that. But if your marriage just becomes a sham, what difference does it make if you're technically divorced or not? And there are things that you can do that destroy relationship. And again, none of us deserve to be in a relationship with somebody else because we all violate these things in one way or another at different times. But the question is, does this relationship even mean anything to you? If it doesn't, it will deteriorate no matter what reason someone gives, no matter what happens. If we do not participate with another person, it's over. Whether you actually admit it or not, it's done. And our relationship with God is the same way. It's like, and he makes it really clear that this is a great picture. Marriage and the mutual support of each other is a great picture of a relationship with God. So what does it mean to be idolatrous against God? Well, I'll ask you this question. What in your mind is worship? How would you define worship? We are to worship God. If we worship someone other than God, we are idolatrous. And that's what he's, you know, it isn't some sexual thing that's involved. It's about relationship. That's what he's going for. So how do we worship God? One of the obvious things, when God gives us what he gives us, we appreciate it. We thank him, right? I mean, if you're not saying thank you to God, but worse yet, in this case, he's saying, not only you guys don't thank me, but you thank somebody other than me. You think that Baal gave you this stuff. So we're in a relationship with God. Who gets the credit? Who gets the thanks for what you have that you appreciate? Are you thanking yourself? Are you thinking that you have what you have because, boy, it really pays to go to school and work hard. It really pays to make those right decisions. Boy, I'm so thankful for the parents I had, the grandparents I have, the fact that I live in America. I am so thankful that I am so lucky. I am so thankful that my boss provided for, you know. Sometimes we have an easier time thanking almost anyone other than to say, God, it's you. And, you know, we thank God once a year at Thanksgiving. And it's like, God, thank you for the tryptophan. Thank you. You know, and other than that, every day we're not even thinking, God, what a beautiful day this is. Thank you. You gave this to us. Thank you for letting us live here in one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's not that we're smart enough to live in California and everyone else is just stupid. It's God's blessed us to give us the opportunity to be here. Do we say thank you to him?
We'll leave you to think that important question over. Are we thankful? We certainly should be. This is The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe, and we just heard a message called God Files for Divorce from Hosea 1 through 3. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Stories series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. Hey, we have new service times here at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are now at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too. ccpacifichills.org. We hope to see you sometime soon. With more of his message from Hosea, here again is Pastor Dave.
Worship also involves, you know, sharing, praising God. So that means telling other people what God has done. Sharing with them that, wow, I am so blessed because God is so good. Or do we tell other people other reasons why, man, whew, that was close. I really lucked out when this happened. Is that who we are? If so, we're taking an opportunity to worship God and we're actually giving other things credit, or we just decide we don't worship anything. Well, when you worship a God, you also serve. So there are things that you do, routines that you appropriate that show that out of gratitude for God, now you want to serve him. You want to get involved. You want to get a backpack and fill it up for homeless people. You want to teach children's ministry. You want to do the things that it is that express, boy, this is a good life. This is great. Do we serve him?
We'll come back to the book of Hosea next time on The Balanced Word with Dave Roth, a daily presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up.